to another exciting episode of That's So Cincinnati. If you're listening and wondering who the heck is talking, hi, I'm Casey Sloan, trending news reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. I've stolen the hosting seat from Burl Love, our usual host for today. Not actually, he did approve me filling in, but with me today for this special podcast is my colleague, Keith Pandolfi, our wonderful food writer at the Inquirer.
Glad to be here on your first solo hosting gig. Yeah. Good luck.
Couldn't ask for a better co-host, you know?
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. He's here with me today because we have an awesome guest and someone who knows a thing or two about the restaurant industry. Of course, I'm talking about the owner of Zips Cafe in Mount Lookout, Mike Burke, who will be in the studio with us shortly. He's going to give us a little bit of an inside scoop on celebrating Zips Cafe 100-year anniversary, how to keep a 100-year-old restaurant in business, the dreaded Mount Lookout parking, and more. So without further ado, let's get this thing rolling. As promised, special guest time on That's So Cincinnati podcast. And in studio with us today, owner of Zips Cafe, Mike Burke. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah.
Welcome, Mike. Good to have you here.
Yeah. Along with us today, we have our excellent food writer, Keith Pandolfi.
Happy to be here, too. Yeah. Always nice to be on the podcast.
Absolutely. So Zips Cafe is celebrating 100 years in business. That's so exciting. Do you have anything?
It's a pretty big milestone. It's one of those. I had recently bought the place when we turned 90, and we kind of did a fun celebration there, and nothing too extravagant by any means. But so leading up to this one, we just kind of built it a little bit as we went and just doing a bunch of fundraisers along the way. And trying to make some awareness for local nonprofits and drive some money to them too.
Absolutely. I actually have a little bit of a secret to share. Yesterday, I went to Zips Cafe for the first time ever. It was my first time there.
What took you so long?
Great question. I lived in Tampa for 2 years before moving back here, so I'm going to blame it on that. But Fair. It was fantastic.
Tampa will do funny things to your brain.
Exactly. You know, yeah.
Just make you forget things.
Right. But it was fantastic. You know, you walk in, you have the 100 years celebration on the front of the door. And since I had never been, I really didn't know what to expect. And you walk in and it's almost kind of like the old fashioned saloon doors. Oh, yeah. I loved it. And the mural up top showing how Mount Lookout looked before.
Yeah, it's cool. Some of those things were added over the years. That mural was probably done back in 96, I think.
Oh, wow.
Under the previous owner, that was kind of his fun addition to the restaurant. Mm-hmm. But those saloon doors, as long as I've been going there, they've been there. So I'm 45. They've been there since I was a kid. I know that much.
Wow. Have you added any special additions to the building yourself?
Nothing exciting. Lots of expensive things, but things like a ceiling and a walk-in refrigerator and things that nobody should notice.
Yeah. Right.
And we have to talk about the trains, the famous trains. What goes into the care and maintenance of the Zips train tracks?
That is a hobby I wish I enjoyed, but it is a pain in the ass. The previous owner, Ron Bircher, put that in after one of his haunts up in Michigan, where he used to go frequently, had one, and he just thought it was cool. It's a great addition. We always get write-ups about it. The kids love it. It keeps the kids busy enough for the parents to have that one more beer, so it's not going anywhere soon.
Great. And we were talking the other day, and something I didn't realize about your history with Zips is that you started there when you were 15 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. So I guess that's well over half my life now, as I keep aging. But now I started there peeling onions after school, after high school, during soccer seasons and stuff. I might take some time off, but other than that, I was washing dishes and flipping cheeseburgers for a long time.
Okay. And what was it like when you started working there at age 15? How was Zips any different than it is now?
It really doesn't feel a whole lot different. The biggest change will be looking at the menu pricing. I mean, that's for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I started there, they were $1.90 and $2 for a cheeseburger, and now they're up to what is it, $10 and $10.50, I think. Mm-hmm. So those are the biggest changes. But other than that, I mean, it's the same old place.
Okay. And so you did go away for you went to college for 4 years up at UD, mm-hmm. University of Dayton, studied fine arts.
Yep.
I think so. A funny thing you told me the other day was that after you graduated from college, your father bought you a Brooks Brothers suit downtown, thinking you would be using it for job interviews, and you ended up just going right back to Zips.
I think that was his goal. I remember it was a, I think it was like a buy one, get one 50% off or something. So he got one for himself, and then I got one as well. And it was never said that it was meant for job interviews, but I think I kind of understood what it was, but I never took that direction.
So you never wore it to work?
No, that thing would be covered in ketchup in no time. Yeah.
When you were 15, did you imagine yourself ever owning the place that you were working at?
It is one of those things that I always thought was really cool. I mean, I grew up in the neighborhood, so Zips has always been Zips. I never frequented there, but we certainly went there.
Yeah.
And it was always just kind of one of those cool, dark places that, like, you know, it just seemed, felt mysterious almost.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, like the men's room's in the back. And I remember one time having to go to the bathroom while I was there, and I just didn't think I was allowed back there.
That's what I thought yesterday when I went. We had no idea that there was, like,
well, unfortunately, the reason the women's room's out front is because women weren't allowed back there.
Oh,
way
really?
Back when. Yeah.
Okay.
So back then, but when I was a kid, it was, you know, filled with smokers and drinkers, and mm-hmm. it just felt like a whole different world back there. So I think I went over to UDF and used the restroom there.
Wise.
Yeah.
Yes. They're much better now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, Casey had her first visit to Zips last night.
Do you
remember?
She told me to go.
I demanded you.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah,
Mike, do you remember your first visit to Zips, the first time you entered the saloon doors?
Yeah, I mean, I remember it was busy. It was really busy walking in there in that kind of breezeway at the front door. You know, we're kind of making our way to that first set of saloon doors, and our family friend Killer's behind the bar, and you can see him through the pass, and he gives us a big wave over the crowd and hits the train whistle, and you can hear the train whistle as it goes around. And I just remember thinking, man, this place is pretty cool. That guy looks like he's having fun.
I mean, his name is Killer too. So
yeah,
I mean,
giant teddy bear.
Did your parents introduce him to you as Killer?
Yeah. And it used to scare, he used to come on family vacations with us. He's a good, great friend of my uncle. So he would come to our beach vacations, and some of the young, you know, or even my younger friends would go, who is this guy? And I was like, oh, that's Killer. And the look on their face when I'd say that, cause he's a big guy too, but
yeah.
So he's got a presence, but and with a name like Killer, it stands out.
Now, was he a biker or something? Where did he get the name Killer? Should we not talk about that?
Well, I think it was his 50th birthday where his friends finally announced it. And it is an extremely boring story, but he was playing softball and he kept hitting the ball foul.
Okay.
But he smoked it, but foul.
Mm-hmm.
And finally somebody said, oh man, that's a way to hit that one, Killer. And it was the way some of those dumb nicknames stick, it stuck.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nothing
that exciting.
No, I was hoping for more, but you know, sure. We'll edit that out.
Yep.
No, I'm joking. But, you know, you were talking a little bit about how Zips, for a while, it was kind of like a men's bar where you would walk by the doors and there'd be cigarette smoke coming out and, you know, just cheap beer being served and spilled all over the place. When did it turn into more of a family establishment?
I would think that was sometime in like, Ron Bercher bought it in 76, and he's the guy that's kind of credited with turning it into what it is now. In fact, Killer, he had been there up until about 2 years ago. He'd worked there for, I don't know, 45 years or something like that. And when he started, he was a bouncer at the front door. So it was that kind of bar.
Okay, wow.
Just a drinker's crowd. Mm-hmm. Dart League was back there. I mean, in our tiny little bar, they had Dart League where you can still see the ring of the missed darts around the wood paneling. So back then it slowly started changing to what it is now. I think that was one of the reasons Ron installed that train was it kind of, you know, it makes it a little bit more just softer, family friendly, place. And over the years, years ago, it was a bar that happened to serve food. And I think the bartender and the owner back then was begrudgingly making you a cheeseburger. And nowadays it's a family restaurant that happens to have a bar.
Mm-hmm. Was it known for its cheeseburger back when it was still in its barroom days?
I think at some point back then, I mean, it was always a burger joint that, but if you look at one of like the old menus that's on the wall that that we believe is from like the 30s, there's quite a bit more on the menu. It's very simple stuff, but it was kind of what was new in that era was these kind of drinking hole-in-the-wall bars during Prohibition had to figure out a way to make some different money. So this cafeteria or cafe-style dining kind of started to become popular, and Cincinnati was kind of a mecca for it from what I've learned over the years.
Hmm.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering that yesterday, too, and I was looking at the menu because you opened 1926. How much has the menu really evolved since then?
When I started there, we really didn't have as big of a menu we have now. So if you look at like the original menu I referenced, or at least the one from the 30s, it seems much bigger. Then it shrunk down significantly to really just cheeseburgers. I think it was beef barbecue, a Metwurst, and that was like about it.
Yeah.
And at first, our cheeseburger, the deluxe cheeseburger, was just pickle and onion. And over the years, that got added, and even later, tomato. Like when I started, tomato was new, and that was late 90s. So, it's one of those things. And over the years, back in the day, we simply used a intercom and a legal pad for all of our ordering from servers to the back of house into the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And so our code was CB or HB for hamburger or cheeseburger. And then deluxe was X because it was pickle and onion. So that was it. And then over the years, tomato came, and that became J in our code. And it never really made sense, but it made sense because tartar was first.
Okay.
We had tartar in-house long before we ever had tomatoes. So T was already taken by tartar. So some way, tomato became J in our weird random code.
Yeah.
And how did we get to the point with I'm forgetting the name of it. The train wreck.
There's the train wreck and the Girth Burger is like the original.
The train wreck and the Girth Burger.
Yeah.
Tell me the origins of those two.
So those are the two bigger sandwiches. The Girth Burger came first, and that was Pat McAnally, who's a former Bengals punter and I believe linebacker. He created this. Him and his buddies, I think some other teammates, would come in, and they were kind of doing like the heavy protein before, like the Atkins diet was cool, I think. So they were just looking to make our relatively small, you know, third pound burger a little bit beefier, and they added a split butterfied Metwurst on top. So the Girth Burger's been on our menu for decades now. The train wreck came around when would that have been? Early, mid 2000s. Old friend and former coworker Zach Lewis kind of coined that one. And that's when we added ham to the menu. So it was just another way to, how can we utilize ham in a, you know, other than simply a ham sandwich or something like that. It was like, oh, we'll use it as a burger topping. Oh, well, if you're going to do that, you may as well also throw a Met on there.
Yeah.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Three different types of cheeses and then dress it however you want. And it's a big sandwich.
Yeah. And Casey, I don't know if you know this, but they're also known for their chili. Which is not
see it on there, yeah.
Not Cincinnati chili, but it is insanely popular. Like I know people who go there just for the chili. Could you tell me a little bit about, you know, serving non-Cincinnati chili in Cincinnati? And
so
how
yeah, it's
about?
One of those things. It's arguably the best thing we do on the menu. Honestly, I think
is it like home style, like the old home style chili.
That is a good way to put it.
And that's my favorite, also.
Oh, you got to try theirs.
Okay.
So it's got the texture, like the meat, the ground beef itself is similar to like the texture of a Cincinnati chili.
Okay.
But then there's beans added to it. There is sugar in it, but it's not like overly sweet by any means. Like a lot of Cincinnati's kind of known for like Cincinnati sweet, from like the barbecue sauce to even, I mean, gosh, graters and egg lamisi is delicious, but like so rich.
Yeah.
So it's not the Cincinnati style there at all either, but it's very, very simple. Like most of the things we do, but it's just consistent and quality.
What's your favorite menu or item on the menu?
The chili is definitely up there. I mean, a cup of chili with just our very simple grilled cheese, or like more of like a toasted cheese sandwich dunked into that chili, is one of the best comfort foods around.
I had a chance to try your white bean chili the other day, which is fantastic. Is that new on the menu, or is that
new in the scheme of things?
New in the scheme of things.
Okay. New being probably 20 years ago, though. So,
you're 100 years old. That tracks.
No, we typically serve that Wednesdays only. It often does sell out at lunch. We try and make enough to keep up so that we can at least serve another pot at dinner because it is that popular. But if you haven't had it, you need to come and just try it. Come on a Wednesday, try both the regular chili and our chicken chili, because the chicken chili added like a little bit of green Tabasco
it's great.
One of the best soups around, honestly.
And it's funny, I was telling you how I one night I was in the Code Room, which is, I think, one of the coolest bars in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Talk about hidden gems.
Yeah.
Behind another set of saloon doors. You have to, you know, go through to get there. But I was sitting with a friend one night, and I ordered my, you know, burger, and he orders a chicken cordon bleu sandwich. And I'm like, what? They don't have that. And he's like, they do. It's a secret menu item. And he was like acting all like he was in the know. and it was delicious. And it's actually one of my favorite things to order now. Tell me a little bit about that. And can anyone order this now, or is it always available?
It's one of those things that's kind of a pro move nowadays, if you will. It was on our menu. It was a true menu item for a little while, gained some decent traction. And then over some, you know, different edits over the years, it's kind of been lost from the menu, but it's fantastic. It's our regular marinated chicken breast, topped with shaved ham from Avrablay Meat Market, some melted Swiss cheese and a side of honey mustard. And it is a kind of like a little hidden secret, but a great, great sandwich.
Okay. And Casey, I also have to ask, while you were there, did you get the Saratoga chips?
No, I got fries. They were so good.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
They're great. I just think Saratoga chips, aside from Saratoga Springs, where I assume they were born and raised.
Yeah.
I think the story goes that Buddy LaRosa brought them. Or no, Ted Gregory, from the... that's right? Okay.
I can't claim that is right, but I would have said instantly.
You heard the same.
Yeah, thing. I would have said instantly. Like I just thought Montgomery Inn invented them.
Yeah. Ted Gregory apparently, you know, brought them to Cincinnati. Zips serves a really great version of them. Now, do I have to request the barbecue sauce, or does that come automatically?
It typically comes with it.
It does. Yeah. Okay, I think they're just some of the best. Do you make those in-house?
We fry them in-house, yeah. Okay. We don't have the room to sit there and slice and soak that many potatoes, but it is fried fresh in-house, I guess you could say. And then another little trick would be instead of the barbecue sauce, get our house ranch that's very good.
All right, I'll mix things up.
They're a good vehicle for, if you're a ranch fan, they are a great vehicle for ranch.
Okay. Yeah, I think that is one of my favorite things about coming back to Cincinnati after being away for so long was Saratoga chips, mm-hmm. which...
They're a great bar snack. Oh, because you don't need them like piping hot. You don't, you know, they can sit for a while you're sitting and chatting and just kind of continue to munch on something salty, salty and crunchy. It's like a pretzel, right?
Yeah. And we also, speaking of like sides, have to talk about your onion rings, did you try the onion rings?
No.
You have so many excuses.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, okay. This is true. This is the story. So yesterday we get our food and I'm like, this looks amazing. I immediately try the French fry and I think, oh my gosh, this tastes kind of like a McDonald's French fry, which I love. So I'm like, but even better, like way better.
Wow.
Yeah. And then my fiance, Zach, who was with me, he also got fries and he was like, man, I really should have got the onion rings. I'm like, why didn't you? He's like, we'll just have to come back.
Yep.
And we will. But now I'm also intrigued with the secret menu item. Do you have other hidden menu items that people don't really know about?
We get some people that, you know, we have guests that come in 3, 4, 5 days a week and sit at the bar for lunch. And some of them get a little bit creative. You know, like the chicken bacon ranch would be another one. It's just very simple addition to what we already have. But, you know, the grilled chicken sandwich, add some bacon, dress it how you want it. Pickle and lettuce, perfect. Mm-hmm. And a drizzle of ranch. And that's like, cheeseburger with bacon on it. It's like, in my mind, it's like the fanciest junior bacon cheeseburger from Wendy's you could ever get. You don't have to go to Wendy's.
And he did say he was going to try that one next. So
it's good.
Burger and onion rings. And I'll let you know.
Yeah. It's good stuff. And I feel like you have enough stuff on the menu that I wouldn't just call Zips a burger joint, even though that's what you're most known for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Over the years, we've added those things just to try and accommodate everybody that walks through the door. Sure. In our business line of work, you try and accommodate everybody, which, you know, you learn is factually just impossible. But you do your best. And, you know, we've added a, you know, black bean burger and, you know, we always have our fried fish. We sell a ton of them right now. We're probably selling a ton of them at lunch right now for Lent.
Lentil season.
So there's should be something for everybody.
Yeah. I also think that's a testament to, especially in the restaurant industry, how some businesses don't last around that long. And you guys have been here for 100 years. I mean, how is that even possible when you think about it, you know?
Yeah. I'm always surprised that more restaurants don't do what we do or similarly to what we do. Mm-hmm. But looking around now, like some of the better restaurants, you know, in Cincinnati or in the neighborhood are doing very simple menus and just doing it very well. So I think that's one of the, you know, a simple trick in the restaurant industry that isn't easy to do, because at some point, you know, if our fries that are so simple came out and they weren't quite crispy enough or just aren't quite hot enough, mm-hmm. then like that simplicity is lost, because it's just, you know, you're not hiding with anything. Right. So it's tough, but simplicity and consistency is key.
Would you say that's what attributed to the restaurant's longevity?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've said simplicity and consistency so many times, but it's really what we do best. And that's what can be difficult to do. Cause if you lose that, you know, in one step along the way, then you've lost it when it comes to the end result.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like the thing I really love about Zips is that you could go away for 20 years, as I did, walk back in, and it's the exact same room. Yeah. Nothing has changed. It's the exact same menu. If it's not the exact same customers, it's probably the children of those customers that you remember from before. Mm-hmm. And that there's very few places like that. Every time I go to a restaurant that I love from the past, I'm like, well, wait, they switched that up, or this is missing, or they, you know, change the artwork on the walls.
Even the staff we have. I mean, so that's how consistent we are. I mean, small changes that we make, speaking of artwork, I've recently hung up old black and white photos of the neighborhood and things like that. But those things don't really get noticed all that much as you would think.
Yeah.
But like even our staff, I mean, I bet if you look back, you know, in most restaurants, the kitchen is where some rotating staff happens frequently. Mm-hmm. Aside from one or two hires in recent months, I bet even most of my kitchen staff, as I'm like rattling back through my brain, I really think most of them have been there for multiple years by now.
Yeah.
And like that is rare in any line of work.
Yeah.
Especially in the restaurant industry. And I think it's just a testament to the staff, to the management, and to everybody involved that just keeps it as a comfortable place for everybody.
Okay. And we should probably talk a little bit about Zips more on savory side. Back in the day, it was known as quite the gambling establishment. When did that start and when did that end?
So that's where our world gets a little murky.
Okay.
It's because back then, in the 1926 and through into the 30s when Prohibition ended, I mean, nobody was documenting these types of businesses.
Right.
At the same time, we were also running books for the local horse tracks. And so there really weren't, there were purposely no paper trails on either of those things. And that also is then where like the cafeteria style dining became popular. Cars became more useful. Street cars were around. People were on the move. But back then, I don't know when it truly ended. This is probably long enough ago to be able to say, but when I think I came home from college, so this would have been 20 something years ago now, and I was working behind the bar on a Sunday with Skip, a longtime Sunday bartender who's been gone now for a few handful of years. I asked him, I said, hey, who are these three guys? You seem to know them pretty well. And there was a guy at the end of the bar, a guy at the middle of the bar, and a guy at the other end of the bar. And he leaned into me real quietly and he goes, actually, those are three old buddies of mine. They're still bookies. And I said, oh, that's kind of fun. But again, I'm only 21 at the time. Mm-hmm, sure. I had nothing really to do with the business. And I was like, that's kind of fun. But they were old school. And then once you started watching them, they all had notebooks, pens. It was all really old. It wasn't digital yet.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, but they all knew each other, of course, but they never talked to each other.
Now, did everybody go back to the code room, the bar I was talking about, to do their
business? I think that's the story. I mean, so, we still have kind of the old blinds in place. They've been replaced. They're modern, but they look old on purpose. But the code was in itself was if the blinds are open, the books were open. So you could come and place your bets, pick up your winnings, pay your losses. And those there's enough of those stories that I believe it to be 100% true. Mm-hmm. Even people that come in now and, oh, yeah, Dad used to bring me down here. And, we'd park out front. He'd run in for a few minutes, come out with a sack of cheeseburgers, and we'd take them home to Mom, and everybody was happy. Mm-hmm. And then Dad was in there either placing bets, paying his debts, or picking up his cash and getting some cheeseburgers along the way, too.
Yeah, to take home.
Keep everybody happy that way.
Yeah.
As long as you come home with food, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually reminds me. There was times over the years where, I field a phone call, and woman on the other end of the line says, hey, this is Mrs. Smith. Is Bill still there? Said, oh, no, I'm sorry. He just left. We were running a little bit behind, but he should be on the way home soon, hot and fresh. Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much. I'd hang up the phone. I said, Bill, you need to get out of here. You need to finish your beer. You need to get out of here, and you need to get home because your wife just called. And if you don't keep her happy, she's not going to let you come back.
Yeah.
And it's not our fault. I'm doing my best.
Yeah.
That was a funny thing from back then. Like, every bar had one phone. There were no cell phones. And every time I was at like any tavern or bar with my dad or my parents, you know, the bartender would be holding up the phone like, Tommy,
yeah,
go
we've
home.
Told you, we've warned you, yeah. your wife's on the hunt.
Yeah, I witnessed a lot of that.
Oh yeah, we actually, funny thing, we used to have a payphone in the dining room years ago. I don't know why this just popped in my head, but every now and then it was the same landline as our house phone. So every now and then you'd pick up the phone to make a call and somebody was already out front putting a quarter in, making a phone call to somebody else. It was one of those weird things over the years that, you know, we've since changed. We've also found a ton, maybe not a ton, that might be an exaggeration, but quite a bit of extra phone lines hidden in different areas that I remember years ago, I had to call my electrician friend. I said, hey, I got this old wire in the men's room and I'm not sure what it is, but starting to look a little suspicious and maybe dangerous even. I don't know anything about electric, but can you come take a look? And he came in, looked at it, and just grabbed his wire cutters and just instantly snipped it. And I kind of was like, oh, that seemed brave, but okay, you're the electrician. And he goes, oh, it's just old phone line. And he followed it and went down like into our closet that hides our Coca-Cola bag-in-the-box stuff. And there was another section of phone lines running down from the ceiling. And it was all, you know, the speculation is that it's all from placing all the old bets, being able to have enough phone lines. Mm-hmm. Because back then you had to get the bets placed via phone. And there was delays and races and stuff like that. So people could scam the bookies by racing to cut off the phone lines to get the results from New York so they could come and beat the bookie and place that winning bet, you know, and cut off the phone lines that way. So
yeah,
old weird history.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot of work.
It was, but it must have been a lucrative business, I would imagine.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
I want to go back to the chili real quick.
Sure.
Something you said the other day stuck with me. There might be a Frisch's connection.
Yeah. So there's a couple different stories over the years and Frisch's seems to make sense to me. This goes back, I couldn't even tell you when. I'm going to say the 60s, early 70s. We had the Zips had hired some servers that came from Frisch's. Most recently had worked at Frisch's. And at that time, that's kind of when the chili came about. And it was, over the years, I remember once I heard that story, I went over to the main liner at the time and just like sat at the counter and had a cup of chili just to see what it was. And I was like, I mean, I could see it. It's not the same, but I can see how the simplicity could have just
better. I'm going to say it.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Right here. I'll say it. It's safe now.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. And you know, since I've moved back, I came back here in 2019, you've been seeing a bit more competition in Mount Lookout Square. You used to be kind of the, you know, the only game in town, you know, there were some bars here and there, but now you've got all sorts of restaurants opening up. How has that affected Zips?
I think it's positive for everybody. Yeah. Would I have to admit, like, I'm sure there are times where some other, the new popular businesses are taking away business from me. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that happens. But at the same time, I know, we're sending business back and forth to each other. We see a lot of the same clientele in our doors that, you know, our neighbors see too. So it's one of those things. I think all ships rise with the sea, if you will. Yeah. And I think good competition is good. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of wonder, you know, I've been the owner now for 11 years, you know, 15 years ago I was manager. So it's like, I wonder what the difference would really feel like, but restaurant world has just changed a lot in 10 and 15 years. I mean, it's a big difference. I mean, mm-hmm. how fast you can leave a review that can change like everything. Reviews are faster to be made than a customer coming and finding a manager or giving a critique in person. And I would much rather deal with somebody giving me a critique face to face so I can talk to you and figure out a way to mm-hmm. potentially make you happy. Once you leave and you write that review, that's kind of out of my hands.
And when we talk about reviews, we're talking about Yelp and similar platforms, which were not around back in the day. I mean, I always wonder how much that would affect a business that's been around for 100 years. It's so beloved in the community, but does that hurt sometimes?
It's one of those things. I'll be honest. I don't read them.
Yeah.
I don't look at them.
Yeah.
Rarely, I should say. It's every now and then when I've, like over the years where I would have dealt with an unhappy customer, I will then kind of keep my eye on them. And a lot of those are reviews that I was not going to make that person happy no matter what.
They're trolling you a little bit.
I hate to say that, but I mean, I think it's done on purpose. Mm-hmm. with a little bit of, you know, trying to get back at me for something. And it's one of those things, like, I can appreciate, I was an art major, so like I can appreciate a good critique, you know. Critiques are powerful.
Yeah.
But when it's simply just a complaint that could have just been fielded one-on-one and we'd all move on and try and make you happy, a critique is powerful. And when you can do them now in seconds and reach millions, it can be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, going back to when we talk about extra competition in Mount Lookout Square, one thing that I really like about the square right now is that there's different kinds of restaurants. You've got Sago, which is just fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's sushi.
That is a gem. Yeah. Sago is up there.
VV Italian. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a bunch of burger joints or taverns competing against each other. There's like some real, you know, it's become a bit of a destination.
I think so. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the parking is terrible.
I was going to say, the parking issue. Yeah.
Do something about that.
That is, there's some pipe dreams from the neighborhood and the community council that we would like to do, but it's one of those things that all the businesses that have come, you know, understand that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no fast solution. And you know, as I think back, like a lot of neighborhoods, a lot of popular business districts have the exact same problem we do.
Yeah.
But the way I've always said it is, if you have a good product, if you make people feel comfortable when they come through your doors, they're going to be willing to walk down the street, even if it's just a 5-minute walk.
Yeah. And you also, being part of, you know, essentially a village, your people can easily walk there from Hyde Park, from Mount Lookout, from all over. So I would imagine you have a built-in clientele just without others coming in.
Yes, we're lucky. We have our neighborhood has taken care of us for years, and our neighborhood and beyond. So we do have a nice walkable neighborhood, but it's one of those things a lot of us, myself included, don't necessarily take advantage of it all the time. So parking will continue to be an issue, but again, it's one of those things that we just understand you have to deal with. So like we do our best to accommodate those once they're there, and hopefully they want to keep coming back.
I mean, based on the crowds I see in the square on weekend nights, especially. Oh, yeah.
The energy in the square is great. Yeah. That's when I just get jealous of like some of the hidden patios that are around in the square now, and we don't have any of that. So it's like, I want fall to hit in August, and I want it to be gray and wet until, you know, every day, because that's when the no patios are in use. But that's just kind of being the old curmudgeon around the corner that doesn't have the patio that everybody else does.
I mean, I told you the other day, my favorite time to go to Zips is in the dead of winter, because it's just the coziest place. Mm. You mentioned that you wish you had a fireplace, and I said the fireplace is almost implied. Like, you don't even need it.
I like that. Like, but it's one of those things. I kind of picture like an old potbelly stove back in the corner somewhere. Yeah. And, you know, it's not, you know, we're not a ski town by any means, but it's, you can picture like a old pair of ski boots and some skis, you know, sitting by the potbelly stove.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
We have actually seen, I've had people ski to Zips before and click off and walk in their boots just on those random crazy snow days.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Probably a few weeks ago. Honestly.
Yeah. It was close. There were cross country ski marks across Zips' front door for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Wow. Yeah.
And honestly, you know, since it is so walkable, you just go get a nice meal and then walk off the calories.
It's a good way to do it. I mean, that's what we used to do when I was a kid. Once I was like old enough to be like out and about on my own, that's when I would have started like kind of frequenting Zips.
Yeah.
And that's what we used to do. I hate to admit it, but we'd like throw on our rollerblades and rollerblade down.
That's fun, actually.
I rollerbladed to my job interview at Zips.
No way.
Yeah. I can't believe I'm admitting that right now, but yeah, that's true.
And I think that's one of the great things about Cincinnati. And I'm basing this on what other people have told me when they visit, is they can't believe how many walkable communities there are, mm-hmm. whether it's Marymount or Mount Lookout or, you know, High Park Square, Wyoming, whatever, that we have so many of them that most cities don't anymore. Mm-hmm. They've all been destroyed.
The other really cool, weird little tidbit on that is I was reading a blog just the other day. It was about all our staircases, because all the hills. So like in all these neighborhoods, like I can think, like I used to walk through what I would call like the Mount Lookout Swim Club stairs that connected right by my parents' house. Would connect to the next street over, and I would walk to Zips, and I don't know, I think it was like less than 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
So I do have to ask, just because I'm curious, is the football from Zach Taylor, the famous football, is it in the code room or is it? Okay.
Dead center behind the bar.
Yeah. And can you believe that he gave it to you guys?
It was one of those things that, him and his family would come in frequently, and you know, we see a handful of the Bengals players now and then. So it was one of those things. I was another jealousy thing. I was like, man, you know, neighbors down the street already got it. Ruby's already got it. Man, like, when are we going to see it?
Yeah, especially
and
being like an OG.
It was the weekend before the Super Bowl. It was a busy Saturday. I'm behind the bar, and I'm walking into the kitchen, and I just kind of see a gentleman walking into the kitchen out of the corner of my eye, and kind of like, oh, I'm going to have to stop him and make sure he's, you know, he probably just missed the restroom. And all of a sudden, I turn to say that to him, and I see it's Coach, and I was like, oh, hey, how are you? And it started to click, and he had it under his arm with his like hoodie wrapped around it, and he popped it open. And he said, that's for you. And I said, holy shit, that's really cool. That's so exciting. You know, and at that point, luckily I had a group of buddies at the end of the bar who saw what was happening at the same time, and they started going nuts.
Yeah.
And then everybody at the bar was kind of like, what the heck's going on back there? And he was super nice. He gave us the ball. He spent time in that code room. Because everybody came in for a photo with the ball. Everybody in the dining room came back slowly. Everybody was very polite. He was exceptional with his time and very kind. So it was a fun addition, and people still come back and see. Next time you're there, we'll just come back, ask for it, we'll hand it to you.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's almost like a full circle moment if you guys being like, you know, the first OG sports bar for the get the ball.
It was fun. It still sits back there. I came down to Cook's for the football case, because I was like, everybody's gonna want to touch this thing, so I better keep it safe.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah,
I know. That's always you. Did you see the code room when you went in there?
We saw the sign, and we were like, I wonder what that is. Can we even go back there?
Yeah.
And Zach was like, I don't know if we can. I was like, no, I can see people's heads like sitting
at
a bar.
It's funny. There's people that I've like know that had come to Zips for a long time. I remember saying, oh yeah, I mean, I think the best spot in the house is just going back to sit at the bar.
Yeah.
And they're like, what bar?
I'm going to have to do that next time.
And they're
time.
Like, oh, I just thought that was like part of the kitchen.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, no. We have a 10-seat bar with a table and back bar. Like, we got full service back then.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I had some friends visiting from Los Angeles about 2 months ago. And they're like, come meet us at Zips. And, you know, it was a weekend night. And I thought, it's going to be so packed in there. And I walk in. I don't see them in the front room. And I'm like, ooh, maybe they snagged. And they had snagged the last table in the code room.
That's
nice.
And it was...
If you sit against that, it's basically a three top.
Yeah.
And if you can get the spot against the wall in that little corner, you can then kind of turn. You see all the bar TVs. You can see everybody come in and out. It's like and you can't really be seen where you are back there.
Yeah. It's the best
it is
table.
One of the best spots in the city.
I love it.
Yeah.
So for the anniversary, we talked a little bit about it, but you have some special things on tap, literally.
Literally.
For the anniversary.
So we started our 100th anniversary celebration back in July of 25, kind of doing a July to July. We have reasons to believe our birthday was somewhere in July. We just don't know when exactly. Mm-hmm. So we kicked off July 25 with a release of a beer with a beer from Mad Tree called just Pils with a Z.
It's really good.
It's a good crisp pilsner. So we've been pouring that since July. We have that around through our celebration. Then in December we released Lil Nez. Which is a light amber lager from Great Lakes Brewing Company out of Cleveland. And then coming up in April, we will release a pale ale called Century, kind of like Cincy Churi, Century, from our friends at Rheingeist. And then we also did a barrel pick with New Riff. So we've done some kind of house cocktails with them, and it's a good bourbon. With between friends and people that's won some blind taste tests. So we're excited about all of it.
Yeah.
That's great. I just want to ask, because out of curiosity, you have a strong relationship with Great Lakes up in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about? And you do something, the release of the Christmas ale, is that what you
Yeah,
do
that's
year?
Kind of become a cult classic.
Okay.
But so Lisa, who is our direct rep from Great Lakes and lives locally, when I started as like beer buying down there, she worked locally with a distributor, and that's kind of who distributed Great Lakes. And that's kind of how I befriended her back then.
Okay.
She's now switched directly to work with Great Lakes, but we have just always sold their product. I think we were the first place in Cincy to really start pushing the Great Lakes Christmas Ale.
Mm-hmm.
And then we added it at a big party where Santa Claus delivers the first keg every year. And it's kind of just become this fun, busy night. And I mean, everybody complains that it gets released earlier and earlier every year, which I think was true this year, which it usually isn't, but it releases in October, right before Halloween. And we will pour a ton of that beer all through the new year. And it's a big one.
And given the alcohol content in that particular beer, I'm guessing it gets a little raucous.
That one is a different beer. They claim it's 6.5%, but I swear that it's it's not a light beer by any means, but it is. You can have a couple of those and your night will change.
Exactly.
Yeah, quickly. Yeah.
My father-in-law that lives up outside of Cleveland, he brings a case down. He used to bring a case down every Christmas. I'm like, just bring a six pack. this family will fall apart if you keep bringing this much.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's delicious. It's definitely worth having at least a pint.
It's really a cult classic at this point.
Yeah.
So do you have any exciting events or anything else coming up for the
We're doing monthly fundraisers. This month, wrapping up with, we partnered with Avril Blay, our butcher. For every Girth burger sold, we're donating $1 back to the Free Store Food Bank. Awesome. And what's pretty impressive with that, with their planning and poll, they can serve 3 meals with each dollar.
Wow.
So like that's way bigger than it seems, right? Like that seems crazy to me. Next month, we just recently partnered with my friends at Ziffel Capital to then be donating $1 for each chili cheese fry sold back to Keep Cincinnati Beautiful. We have a big one coming up in April with La Soupe, who is near and dear to me. I love that place. I volunteer there like almost every Monday, either chopping veggies or making 50 gallons of soup or something crazy. Mm-hmm. And then, but also throughout this, we're also doing a Zip Burger for Life raffle.
Ooh.
Where it's a $5 donation gets you one entry into our Zip Burgers for Life raffle. 100% of those proceeds will go back to all these nonprofits that we have worked with throughout our celebration. So far we've already sold quite a bit and it's gaining traction. The definition of Zip Burgers for Life for our contest is one burger a month for 50 years.
Wow.
So I've kind of look at it as like, well, that's by today's menu price, that's like $6,800. So if we can raise at least $7,000 in ticket sales, I think that would be a success.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
And for the uninitiated, I should have mentioned this earlier, all of your burgers are made with Avril Blay.
They
make them for you.
We get 10-pound bags from them and we'll get hundreds of pounds a day. And then we portion them into our patties and cooked fresh. Those guys, if they're not the best in the business, I'd like to see who's doing it better.
Yeah.
I mean, from their sausages, two hidden gems, well, a few hidden gems down there. I love going down to that place. Those guys are great at what they do. If you haven't had their, what they call Tiny Links, which is their breakfast sausages, that is like, you have to try it. Oh. Their Swiss Mets are incredible. Add something pickled with it, sauerkraut, or even just some diced pickles. Those are two of my favorites. And Randy's going to hate me for saying this, but if he's ever working with lamb and you can find the lamb tenderloins, get those. Unbelievable.
I made a mistake with Randy a while back where he was selling this. It was called Kiwi Bacon.
Oh, yeah.
And he let me try it. And I wrote it up. And then the next time I came in, he was like angry with me. He's like, that's all everybody wants now, man. Like, I have to make it all the time. And he's like, you know, I was like, I'm sorry. It was really good. Yeah.
I had a little bird tell me that you were going to be writing an article about that because I happened to be down there, I think, right after you had left, maybe. And I even thought to myself, I was like, how do I make something with kiwi bacon at Zips?
Yeah, I know.
So I can be on top of this this weekend's trend.
Mm-hmm. I know. I thought he'd be pleased, but I think he was angry with
me. It sounded like a heck of a project to make this kiwi bacon, though.
He looked tired when I was
similar to the lamb tenderloin. I mean, they're only about 4 or 5 inches long. It's just the tiny tenderloin in a lamb that I guess, as far as lamb go, it's hard to get to when you're actually butchering it. So most of the time it just simply goes into a grind or into waste. Okay. But one day I had to come down there twice cause something was forgotten. He knew I wasn't in a good mood. And he said, hey, you like lamb? I said, I love lamb. He goes, what are you doing for dinner tonight? I said, I have no clue. He said, well, do something with these. And I said, oh, what is it? He said, lamb tenderloins. And I was like, oh, hell yeah, I'll do something with that. Yeah. And it was fantastic. It's super simple, but they're unbelievable.
Yeah.
But I think just nobody ever uses them because they would charge you too much money
for the lamb.
It'd be a super expensive, tiny amount of meat.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But somebody's going to now ask Randy for it, and I'll laugh at that, and I'll have
to
buy
him. We love you, Randy. Sorry if this upset you.
I'll have to buy him a PBR. He'll be fine.
Yep. Yeah, well, if you needed a reason, to eat at Zips Cafe, aside from getting a good meal, it's definitely, you know, benefiting charity and all of the
causes. we're having fun doing that. We got a few more coming up. We're going to end our celebration, our 100th celebration on July 7th. No big final plans on how we're doing it, but we will announce
I just
partnered with the Alt Park Fireworks and UDF to sponsor those big fireworks up at Alt Park.
Wow.
So I was like, I don't know if the Razzies will be able to make a big old Z for me in firework, but that would be pretty cool.
That'd be really cool. Maybe like a drone light show.
That's a great idea. Hopefully they're working. Hey, listen up.
Yeah.
But no, that'll be fun. Because United States turns 250. Mm-hmm. The fireworks themselves at Alt Park are turning 60, and then Zips is 100. So I was like, I got to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Perfect.
Yeah. No brainer.
Exactly.
I think that's good. Did you have anything else? Okay, cool.
No, I'm good. I'm glad I snuck the Burgers for Life in. So
yeah, that was good.
I like that because I want to sell a ton of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you explained that. I'm going to go. Members of the media can enter, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I guess I can't invite you to be the person to do the drawing.
Oh, that'd be cool.
We'll talk to Burl.
Yeah, okay.
When
okay.
he's back in town, okay. we'll ask Burl, yes.
No, that'll be fun.
Yeah. Cool. Well.
How was that? How'd I do?
That was great.
Oh, was
Thanks
it
for
over?
Having me.
Yeah, I figured that.
Oh, okay. You did great.
Thanks.
Do we need to do an ending?
No, we'll do it.
Thank him.
Okay.
Should we do it?
Oh, okay. Should I? Is that what he normally does?
We usually thank the person.
I think we wrap it up somehow.
Yeah. You just kind of faded away there.
Well, my ending was like wrapping it up with the
charity.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So you say thank mm-hmm. you for coming, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it was so great to have you, Mike. Thank you so much for coming on. We're so excited to have you today.
Thanks for having me. This was fun. I'll do this anytime. I love talking shop.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. And there'll be a story on Zips coming out that I'll be writing sometime in the next month or so. So look forward to reading that. We covered a lot of the ground during this interview, but there's other things that you might learn about Zips and Mike.
I'm excited to see it.
Yeah. Well, thanks awesome. For being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that was great. And if you're a returning listener, you know, at the end of the podcast, we share something that happened to us recently that was just so Cincinnati. So Keith, do you have a so Cincinnati experience recently?
I think so. I attended the annual Chinese New Year celebration at Oriental Walk restaurant. And I think the Wong family who own Oriental Walk are very Cincinnati. If you grew up here, especially, so the event itself is just really fun. I go every year. It's held at the Fort Thomas location. They say it's like a 15-course meal, but it felt like a 30 to 40. I had to leave before it was over.
Really?
There was so much food. And the Wongs were there, the whole family. There were musical performances and the dragon came out.
I saw videos of that on social.
It was crazy. I took my mother and my daughter and my wife there. We all had a good time. And, if you get a chance, like next time they do it, you can buy tickets, online to attend it. You don't have to have a special invite. That was definitely the highlight of my week.
That's so fun. Mine, shamelessly enough, and I think it could qualify me to be a true Cincinnatian, is I've tried to convince my fiance, Zach, nearly every day this week to get Skyline, specifically a Cholito, and he was not having it. He was like, I cannot have Skyline again. We had it last week. Well, this is a new week, and it's National Chili Week. Yeah. So, you know,
yeah.
Skyline, if you're listening to this, I'll be there. I'll try to be there by Sunday.
Yeah, and tell them there's other things on the menu. You get a lovely Greek salad.
Yeah, or one of the chicken wraps.
A chicken wrap?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He needs to get out more.
I agree.
So, and with that, we'll wrap up. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. Our producer today, the one and only Sam Green.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, give us a rating, and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.